Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
A good Sunday to you. This is the weekend edition of the LA Report. I'm Julia Paskin, and on today's program, last October, the campus of Cal State University Dominguez Hills was rocked after a student newspaper published a cover featuring hateful slurs against Latinos. We'll talk about how just four words upended a university's journalism program and stirred a reckoning over race. Then, community colleges in Southern California are paying increasing attention to their students' basic needs. Some go hungry, others don't have a home. We'll visit one campus in Long Beach to find out what kind of services they're providing for students who are struggling. That's all coming up in just a few minutes, but first, here's the news. An annual Lunar New Year festival is happening in Alhambra in the San Gabriel Valley today, and the city is recognizing local hero Brandon Say. Alhambra was the location of an attempted second shooting after the Stardance Studio in Monterey Park. Say disarmed the shooter and is being honored at the festival for keeping the community safe. He'll receive a Medal of Courage on the festival's main stage at 12:30. John Buery is the CEO of the Alhambra Chamber of Commerce. He hopes today's event will help the community move forward.
Communities coming together is an essential part of healing. We can't heal in isolation.
The festival will have a wellness pavilion where community members can process the events with mental health professionals and with one another. That's from 9 to 6 on Alhambra's Main Street. Meanwhile, there's another storm coming our way. About a quarter of an inch of rain is expected throughout today and tomorrow, but it's going to be a cold one. High temperatures in LA and Orange counties will be in the 50s and lows in the upper 40s. In the mountain areas, the low temperatures could dip all the way down to 21 degrees. David Sweet with the National Weather Service says the cold air from this storm could drop snow levels down to around 2,500 feet.
And so some areas that don't typically get snow have the threat of getting some snow and ice and slippery roads.
That'll affect the Grapevine and some parts of the Antelope Valley. Protests against police brutality continue in LA today, set off by the disturbing video of Memphis police officers beating 29-year-old Tyree Nichols. Nichols died from his injuries, and the officers face murder and kidnapping charges. Nichols was known for his photography and skateboarding, so Black Lives Matter organizers are inviting protesters to bring their own skateboards to an action in Venice. That's today at 3 on Lincoln and Venice. They're also calling attention to the death of Keenan Anderson after LAPD officers tased him multiple times. There were a handful of demonstrations yesterday outside of LAPD headquarters in downtown LA, also a couple traffic disruptions in West LA and in Hollywood. Police say a few people were detained and one person was arrested in Hollywood. And local officials are also reacting to the video. LA Mayor Karen Bass says the arrest was carried out by a specialized squad for crime suppression known as the Scorpion Squad. LA has similar units, and the mayor says she has concerns about those units when they're used for mass crime suppression.
If you just go out in mass and say this is a neighborhood that, you know, has had an increase in crime, so let's essentially make everybody a suspect and pull over as many people as we can randomly, that creates a terrible relationship between law enforcement and the community.
Mayor Bass called the Memphis officers' actions egregious and an absolute tragedy. Some Asian Americans are questioning the state of mental health in their community, particularly among older populations after the shootings in Monterey Park and Half Moon Bay. KPCC's Michael Flores spoke to an expert on how to help AAPI elders seek help.
Elderly Asians tend to display a sort of stoicism in response to emigrating from places of war and poverty. Jenny Wang, a therapist and author specializing in AAPI mental health, says that can leave them to deal with difficult feelings in isolation.
I think there sometimes is pent-up resentment, anger, frustration.
Experts say younger generations can help them manage those feelings and break through the taboo of therapy by sharing their own experiences with mental health counseling.
So I've had clients say that through their own personal therapies, their parents start to realize perhaps that therapy isn't as threatening, overwhelming.
Wang adds that it's important to demonstrate that therapy isn't just about venting, but about developing a plan to change things for the better. I'm Michael Flores.
We have more on mental health support at LAist.com. And remember, you can call the 988 Mental Health Crisis Helpline anytime. Just dial 988. It's been a week since LA woke up to the news of a mass shooting in Monterey Park. We've been affected in different ways, some very directly losing a loved one or suffering serious injury. For others, we may feel it more indirectly. And if you've seen the violent video of Tyre Nichols' arrest, it hurts to watch. It's brought up a lot of feelings for people here in LA. There's just a whole lot to process at this moment. So for some guidance, I spoke with Rebecca Zeitland, a licensed marriage and family therapist with D.D. Hirsch Mental Health Services. And she explained why we can feel strongly even without being directly touched by violence.
Incidents of mass violence can instill feelings of fear or confusion, anger, or even helplessness for those who are either there at the location of where the mass violence was, or even those who are watching it through the news media outlets. You know, they disrupt our sense of order and safety and can cause emotional distress for even those of us who are not directly involved with the traumatic event.
I mean, for me, like, I'll be honest with you, I've been really down since Sunday. I'm someone who already has depression. I'm not exactly shy about that with our listeners. But it is making me wonder if existing mental health challenges can get stirred up by the event, like witnessing mass violence.
Any traumatic event can be activating for all of our emotions, whether we live with a mental health disorder or not. The reality is to bring sadness amongst our community, especially when it's close to home and in our local community. And so it can bring up those feelings of sadness or feeling of shock or numbness or fear even. And then if you put on top of that, someone who's living with their own mental illness, I think that can really compound the two together and really make it feel at times unmanageable.
So with that in mind, for anybody listening that is struggling with any kind of feelings around this, or maybe just in general, what do you recommend folks do to start caring for their own mental health?
Well, I think the most important thing to do is really be aware of how you're feeling. And if you are feeling like maybe something like this is activating or triggering to you, there's a lot of resources out there. I think the first thing we can do is just share that we're struggling, we need some help or support.
And I know one of those resources is the 988 Mental Health Crisis Hotline that can be called for free 24/7. But I understand there's also a specific disaster distress helpline. Can you tell us what's the difference about that number?
D.D. Hirsch, we are one of five organizations that operates the disaster distress helpline. And it's available 24/7 for crisis counseling and support for people experiencing that emotional distress or mental health challenges as it relates to natural or human-made disasters. The wonderful thing about it is that we have resources specific for the disaster that somebody might be experiencing that emotional response to. So what's really helpful is we provide not only that emotional support, but specific resources as it relates to that natural or human-made disaster.
And that number is 1-800-985-5990, or go online and look up the Disaster Distress Helpline. So with all this in mind, Rebecca, I feel like it's getting easier for me to talk about mental health because I've pushed through a lot of that discomfort myself. And I think it's really important for us in the station to talk about this so everybody knows that it's okay to talk about. But nevertheless, you know, it's still hard and there's still a lot of taboos around mental health and about therapy for all kinds of reasons. So what advice do you have if you want to support someone else that, you know, is struggling and maybe even someone that might be a little resistant to getting help?
There's a lot that we can do. I think the most important thing we can do is utilize active listening, really building that rapport and have a trusting relationship with the person who's in need of support. You want to really be present and even give some validating statements. You know, I'm following what you're saying. I hear how challenging this must have been or how challenging it is to live through something like this. Or we could even validate someone's story by really acknowledging that person's experience and what their reactions are. Additional to that, I think it's important also that we normalize someone's reaction to help people understand at times what they're feeling is very normal.
That is amazing advice. Thank you so much.
That is Rebecca Zeitlin, a licensed marriage and family therapist with D.D. Hirsch Mental Health Services. Thank you so much for being with us.
I'm so happy to be here.
Also, for folks impacted by the Monterey Park shooting, there's going to be multilingual counselors and caseworkers at the Bruggemeyer Library on South Ramona Avenue. That's going to be from noon to 6 Tuesday and Wednesday, and from 10 to 6 Thursday and Friday. We'll be right back after this short break.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artist's major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at nortonsimon.org.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
Welcome back to the LA Report. I'm Julia Paskin. When the cover of a special edition of a Cal State University Dominguez Hills newspaper was released with anti-Latino slurs in the design, the fallout was immediate. It stirred up painful emotions among the mostly Latino student population, leading to protests, soul-searching, and the eventual resignation of the newspaper's faculty advisor. With more on this story, here's higher education reporter Adolfo Guzman-Lopez.
Classes resumed this week at Cal State Dominguez Hills, but there's a lingering anger among students and faculty from an incident that rocked the South LA County campus last semester. I'm Adolfo Guzman Lopez. The student newspaper's Hispanic Heritage Month issue listed 23 different terms for Latinos on its cover. The list included several vicious racial slurs. Students and employees saw the cover of the bulletin on October 12th when the newspaper's advisor sent out an email with a link to the online version. Donna Nickel is chair of Africana Studies. She clicked on the link.
My jaw just dropped. Like, who thought this was okay?
The cover was a full-page illustration. Nearly two dozen words were written in white letters. Along the top half, Hispanic, Latinx, Brown, and towards the bottom, four words, all slurs against Latinos, with wrongful connotations on immigration status, race, and cultural stereotypes. We're not repeating the words in this story. There was no context inside explaining why these slurs were published. The damage was swift and wide. Elizabeth Corral was in a Chicano studies class when a friend showed her a screenshot.
Honestly, it made me feel disgusted.
And it made her feel unsafe. 70% of Cal State Dominguez Hills students are Latino.
If somebody wanted to do damage to the Hispanic community, and especially during this month, because we always know that there's some radical out there who has these ideas, comes in here within, you know, assault rifle or something, this is a school to target.
The university took the online issue down. Amid the anger, many people asked the same question. Who was responsible and how did it happen? Journalism professor Ana de la Serna walked into the bulletin offices that same day to find out. About 10 of the student newspaper staffers were there, she said. So was faculty advisor Joel Beers. The mood was somber, but de la Serna soon learned that the student journalists were surprised by the cover, too.
They actually had not seen the image. Many of them were just coming out of their other classes.
One student journalist at the Bulletin said by email that he did not see the cover before it was published. Seven others did not reply to a request for comment. Advisor Joel Beers provided his own emails to KPCC that show he came up with the idea for the cover, including the slurs. Beers, who is white, was invited to attend a town hall 2 days later to explain. But he didn't show up.
I got the time wrong, and that was just something that you can't walk away from that. I left the students out to dry, not consciously.
Beers has not spoken publicly about what happened. He said he wanted to provoke discussion about how these labels had been imposed on this group of people.
It was not a good decision. It was a bad judgment on my part. I totally miscalculated the paper's audience.
In the following days and weeks, university emails called the words racist and unacceptable, and administrators apologized. The university's student journalists also apologized, even though they didn't create the cover. Many involved feel that the university as a whole missed an opportunity to turn the incident into a teachable moment. But others are hopeful. Instructor De La Serna said the university and students should not move on from the feelings stirred by the incident.
It serves us as a reminder that there are so many underlying issues and that we need to keep talking about things.
Things such as student struggles to pay rent and buy food, along with the university's responsibility to help students with these underlying issues to help them earn their degrees.
Community colleges in Southern California are increasing attention on helping students meet basic needs. Some colleges report that students sleep in their cars or struggle to find their next meal while balancing their studies. Our community colleges reporter Jackie Orchard visited Long Beach City College to see what services are being offered.
We keep the diapers stocked. We have a good stock of hand sanitizers, feminine hygiene products.
Tucked away in the student center of Long Beach City College is an unassuming glass door labeled Viking Vault, where big things are happening. Upon entering, a student would first see shelves of canned foods and fresh produce, or turn to the right to find rows of diapers and toys. But the vault holds more than food and household items. It is also the center point for basic needs like housing support and transportation services for nearly 1,000 students per week. Justin Mendez is the interim director for basic needs at LBCC, and he says addressing these needs means first educating the public that there is no typical community college student. They all have different struggles.
We're acknowledging we're having an increased population of parenting students that are on their own.
Mendez says part of his job is protecting anonymity so students feel comfortable using these services.
So we try to make it as simple as possible. We ask for their student ID, how many people are in their household, and that's for reporting purposes for where we get our donations, and then contact information.
Mendez points to the QR code sheet posted at the entrance. When students sign up, they can check a box if they're experiencing homelessness, if they're a veteran student, if they're former foster youth, or formerly incarcerated, so that his team can connect them with additional resources. Mendez says the whole operation runs on a hodgepodge of grants, community collaboration, and private giving, including for some of the most popular items, gas cards and Metro Go passes.
So it gives them free access to all of Long Beach Transit, all of LA Metro, the railways, Norwalk, Artesia, most transit systems throughout LA County.
The Viking Vault opened in a small space in 2019, but high demand brought the program into its larger current space in 2020, where it now operates as a basic needs center. Funding comes from the Student Equity and Achievement Program, part of the California Community College Chancellor's Office. Last year, the chancellor started a basic needs budget as well. That and other money from LBCC funds a 7-person staff and 10 student assistants. Andrea Ortiz is one of those staff members and is in her first year of studying social work at Long Beach City College. She says she, too, felt nervous when she first came to the vault, but she wants classmates to see that it's really no big deal.
Don't be discouraged. Don't feel intimidated. Just come in. You know, everyone's friendly here. They're going to make you feel welcome. The more you come, the more it's going to feel like an everyday thing. So just come in and say hi.
Mendez says these services are great, but he's got his eye on an even bigger challenge, housing.
That'd be the dream, right? For me as a basic needs director to say, hey, we actually have housing and we can allocate these specific units for our students for that immediate short-term placement while we're getting them connected to more long-term support.
Mendez says being able to offer that kind of service would be huge, especially because the students he sees are often under all kinds of pressure.
Their mental health concerns, they're going through domestic violence abuse, they just got kicked out of their family because they just had a kid, or maybe they just came out. There's so many different stories and struggles that our students are going through.
For now, Mendez is looking ahead to February 6th, when about 24,000 students will return to LBCC's campus for the Week of Welcome to kick off the spring semester. He says the shelves will be stocked.
Come by, let us know what's going on, and let us know how we can help you.
Covering community colleges, I'm Jackie Orchard.
Thank you for listening to the weekend edition of the LA Report. We'll be back tomorrow with the AM and PM editions to deliver you more of what's happening in LA and Southern California. Until then, enjoy the rest of your weekend and do try to take it easy. I'm Julia Paskin. The LA Report is produced by Michael Cosentino. The Weekend LA Report is engineered by Sean Corey Campbell. On weekdays, the LA Report is engineered by Brandon Bowles and Tui Mao. Special thanks to the reporters, editors, and the entire KPCC LAist newsroom. Support for this podcast is made possible by Gordon and Donna Crawford, who believe that quality journalism makes Los Angeles a better place to live.
This program is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people. The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.